Wow, I can't believe that we're at the end of our time together. We've thoroughly enjoyed getting to meet you, know you, spend time with you, break some bread with you. We are off back to Colorado Springs.
Yeah, which I'm looking forward to seeing our kids, but this has been amazing. This morning we were walking around the lake. We made it around both days. And I said, you know, it kind of feels like we've been gone for a week. And it's just been such a time of refreshment and just such a, it's just been a wonderful, joyful time. So thank you for interacting with us, for questions, for comments, and just letting us get to know you a little bit. It's just been a joy.
Yeah, we left off yesterday kind of talking about when we need to make a decision, how do we do that in such a way to where we both feel like we're winning. Aaron and I have really worked at this within our relationship, and one of the things that that we've really tried to utilize is this idea that in a marriage, a win-win solution is always better than a win-loss. Who agrees with that? Who likes that? Who has strived to make that a part of your relationship? I know that we have, but let's be honest, let's be real. That's hard to do. Sounds great, makes a wonderful motivational poster. We could hang that on any wall and strive to do that, but come on, let's get real. There's times where she wants things very differently than I do. There's times that we both want something so dramatically different that living that out is tough. I remember one time in particular, you were what, probably 8 months
pregnant? 8 months pregnant with our third child, Garrison, and we were living in Ozark, Missouri. We had a three-bedroom home, and we had this open loft area. And so we kind of talked about it, and we said, you know, it'd be really cool. Greg's kind of, you know, his interior decorating skills decided that it would be great.
I will drop this thing right out.
I implore you to drop it.
So I love it now.
To enclose this open loft area to create a fourth bedroom. So we started asking around. We asked at work. We asked at church. We asked friends, you know, who is a contractor that could come in? And you kind of had a little design that you had in mind. And everyone kept saying, get Rodney. You got to get Rodney to come in and do this remodel. And he'll do a great job. He's a great guy, loves the Lord, you know, on and on. And so we finally called Rodney, and the day came. We set up an appointment. Rodney came to the door. There was a knock. I went and opened the door, and I think you were watching me. I opened the door, and I kind of looked up and kind of stepped back. And so then you came forward to see who was at the door.
Yeah, that was odd. I mean, literally, your head goes way up, just steps back. And so I come around the door and go, oof. Because Rodney was enormous. Rodney was probably 6'9", 300 pounds of muscle. He was huge. And I'm staring at this large man thinking, I hope you're Rodney or we're gone. We will be in heaven in just a moment. And because Rodney was very intimidating looking. When I use the phrase Ozark Mountain Builder, what are some images that conjure up in your mind? Rodney had clothes on that was good. What do you think he was wearing? Overalls, absolutely. He had a shirt on. What kind of shirt do you think he had? Yeah, plaid flannel. Okay, Rodney had a beard. What do you think it looked like? Yeah, just full-on ZZ Top. I mean, just, you know. Mm-hmm. You know, he had a baseball cap. What do you think his cap said? What was that?
Cabela's.
Bass Pro, John Deere, you got it, yeah. So the totality of Rodney was just like, ah. And so, but Rodney turned out to be actually a really nice guy, turned out to be a wonderful builder. And so the day came when, as he was starting to build, he's busy working away. Erin was in graduate school working on her master's degree in counseling to help me. And so, as my gratitude, I would stay home on that day and kind of manage our middle daughter, Murphy. And so, Murphy's playing upstairs. I'm downstairs working. Rodney's up in the loft area, you know, building away. Well, Murphy comes toward by Rodney, so she's kind of the little balcony area, and yells down to me. And Murphy was going through this really odd season of her life that she just would constantly ask us if we love her. Daddy, do you love me? Mommy, do you love me? I mean, she just asked us over and over and over again. We'd say, yes, honey, we love you. We're proud of you. And she'd, you know, clap and squeal and run off. But this just would you know, just rotate again and again and again. So she comes to the balcony. And so she yells out, Daddy. I said, yeah, hon. She goes, do you love me? Well, before I could answer, Rodney starts laughing at this display of emotion or what, I don't know what was going on for him, but he thinks it's real funny. So, yes, honey, I love you. Yay. And then she goes, Daddy, uh-huh. She goes, are you proud of me? And again, same thing. Before I could answer, Rodney is laughing. Now he's really laughing. You can hear this big, loud, hoo, hoo, hoo. I mean, like the Jolly Green Giant building in our, you know, space upstairs. Yes, honey, I am so proud of you. Yay. And then she, now again, we're just going to keep going through this. Daddy, uh-huh. She goes, do you love Rodney? And you hear this kind of hammer drop. And I said, yes, honey, I love Rodney a lot. And so then you could hear Rodney trying to explain to little three-year-old Murphy how that's okay, that through Christ, men, we can love each other. It was just funny. And I'm like, just dude, just don't worry about it. But Rodney built a wonderful room. So the day came that it was time to move furniture into this new room. Have you ever had a conversation with your spouse to where you've talked through a decision? Took you a while, you talked it through, you make a decision, and then when it comes time to executing on the decision, they do something very different. Does that ever happen to anybody? Okay? Because we had talked about this. We had talked about building out this new room for our oldest daughter, Taylor, who would enjoy the room. It's a great space, some neat design features. So I grab Taylor's stuff and I start to haul it in there to meet Aaron in the hallway holding the baby stuff.
Yeah, because we had had this conversation, we had talked about it, we built this room for the baby.
No, we didn't. This is not, every time we talked, it was Taylor would enjoy this, the baby. What would he care? Why does he need a nice room? You could put him in a closet and he'd be fine, right? Not that I've ever done that, all right? Some of you are mandated reporters. I'm saying I haven't done that. I'm just theoretically saying he would like it. That's not what we decided.
Yeah, I remembered I had a completely different recollection of the conversation and the decision.
Has this ever happened to you? Now again, hey, in a marriage, a win-win is always better than a win-loss, right? That's what we want. But in this situation, how do you get there? She wants Garrison in the room. I want Taylor in the room. How do you come up with that win-win? It's hard, isn't it? As a matter of fact, Aaron and I would say, not only is this hard to live out, we actually think that's not true at all. We would say that's a myth. And it's a very subtle myth, one that we all read, that we have all bought into. All your hands went up. Yeah, we want to do that. Amen, brother. Let's close in word of prayer. We're ready, good to go. That's not, there's something very, very subtly wrong with that statement. What's wrong with that statement has created a lot of division within a marriage, a lot of frustration, a lot of hurts, a lot of power struggles. Here's what we think is wrong. If we were to rewrite that statement, we would say it this way.
Mm-hmm. And you're going to see it's not that different. So it's just this little tweak that the enemy likes to use to cause division in marriage. In a marriage, you are on the same team. So you're on the same team. Thus, you either win together or you lose together. So because you're on the same team, you're either going to win together or you're going to lose together.
It's missing.
Oh, it's missing. What happened to it?
I don't know. It's gone.
Things are now disappearing on the slides. But, you know, it makes me think of our son, Garrison, who loves basketball. And so, you know, he's gearing up, getting ready for the high school basketball season, going to open gyms, he's lifting weights, he's training. Let's say that the season starts, Garrison has an amazing game. Let's say best game of his entire high school career. Let's say he scores, you know, so many points, and actually he ends up with a triple-double. I just learned what that was from him. because his favorite player, Westbrook from the Oklahoma City Thunder, had many triple-doubles. You were at the game with Garrison
when he broke the record.
So let's say Garrison has a triple-double, you know, great game, on and on, but the other team scores more points. So then does Garrison win for his team because he had such a great game and the rest of his teammates lose? Or does his whole team lose together? That everybody loses together. It's the same thing in marriage. That we are on the same team, thus we either win together or we lose together. Because really there's no other option. We're one. We're unified. We've talked a lot about the unity in marriage. That we become one when we take the covenantal vow before God. And so we become one. But yet the enemy likes to come in and kill, steal, and destroy. And what's he after? He's after our unity. To make us feel divided. Because a house divided will fall.
This was huge for us. Such a small thing. You might be sitting there going, duh. Well, it wasn't a duh for us. There were ways that we operated within our marriage that we weren't living this out. And when we really started to understand that we either win together or we're going to lose together, there is no such thing as a win-loss. That's what's wrong. Hey, it appeared
there
magically.
It
wow. You guys are good up there. It's very impressive. Now if you could make this thing work, it'd be even more awesome-y. So, well, if you just go forward with us. It's almost like there's no one up there now. There we go.
There.
I can't see. That's two very bright lights. I feel like there's a truck in the sky bearing down on. Doesn't it feel like
yeah.
that?
Yeah. So, here it comes.
I'm sorry. That was a squirrel moment. I'll never forget the day that I came home to Erin and I sat her on the couch and I said, hey, you know what? I was thinking about how we make decisions. And I know there's times that it's frustrating. I know there's times you feel like you've lost. There's times that I feel like I've lost. But I'm wondering, from this day forward, could we do this very differently? As a matter of fact, could we kind of make a rule that from now on, that it's unacceptable for either one of us to feel as though we're losing? Let's say that that's no longer okay. That the only acceptable way that we can do this is to find solutions that we both feel great about. And I love that. And there was something about acknowledging that, saying that out loud, that really changed the way that Erin and I approach making decisions. It's not that we don't struggle with that. It's not that it's hard. But I'm telling you, in our marriage now, this really is how we live this out. That it's unacceptable for either one of us to feel as though we're losing. All Erin, I've told her, all you have to do is say to me, hey, you know what, hon? I can't control you. But I just want you to know that if you walk forward in that way, or if that's the decision you're making, that I just want you to know that that's a loss for me. And our team loses. And I instantly get that. And I got tired of our marriage team losing. And I told her, from this day forward, let's do that very differently. The same way, if Erin is walking forward with something that doesn't feel good to me, I'll just tell her, you know what? Yeah, something about that, it's hitting me wrong. Could we figure out something that actually feels good to both of us? And that's a very different way of functioning. And so again, we redefined winning as finding solutions that feel good to both of us. And you talk about creating safety in a marriage. I feel so safe that when we have to decide something, that Erin is looking out not only for her own interests, but also for my interests as well, and vice versa. And we've really tried to live out this Philippians 2:4 verse. Again, I like how it's implying, well, of course, you're a human. Of course, you're going to look out for your own interests. We're not trying to tell you don't be human. But how about, as you're looking out for your own interests, why don't you look out for her interests as well? And there's that win-win that we really try to strive. So how do we do this? How do we put this into action? Let's make this practical. If you like this idea, if it feels good, we're going to make decisions in a way that feels good to both of us. Awesome. What does that look like? How do we do that? Mm-hmm. So going back to this bedroom that Rodney built for us. So we weren't in any big fights, right?
No.
Just, felt this kind of like this weird power struggle. Well, Garrison in the room, no, Taylor in the room.
Yeah, and so we kind of set both of the kids' stuff down and decided, you know, that we would just kind of wait and see where we end up. And we weren't mad at each other or disgruntled, but we just decided to wait until we saw it eye to eye. So ironically, we were teaching one session that weekend at a church, a local church. You know, and God has a sense of humor because ironically, the one session was on making decisions as a team, making decisions, unified decisions within marriage. So we were getting ready to go and we were driving to this church. And typically back then when we would teach this concept, it was very similar, not identical, but very similar. We would come up with ideas of situations we had been through, decisions we had made, and we would write them down on little pieces of paper, and we would let someone choose one, and then we would walk through the steps of how we made that decision. So there we were, my little belly, and we're driving along the freeway to this church to teach this one session, and I said, hey, we haven't made our little pieces of paper. We haven't decided what we're gonna walk out and model. And again, we have very different recollections of how this conversation went. Because you thought you said something, and I don't remember that. I didn't remember that.
Well, I clearly remember saying this. Because as we were brainstorming, you know, just recent decisions we had that we had worked through, she goes, hey, what about this new bedroom conflict thing? I said, no. Oh, I said, stop writing. No. Don't put that in there. She's like, why? Well, honey, this is on how you make good decisions. Have we made this decision yet? No. That'll just be weird. I don't want to. Don't put that in there. And I clearly remember her agreeing with that boundary of mine. So fast forward, we're up on the stage in front of a group about this size, and we get to this part. And so we take the little piece of paper that are folded up and a little John Deere hat in memory of Rodney, and we kind of hold it out, right? And the guy takes one out, and he reads it out loud. Use your imagination. What do you think he says out loud? Yeah, the new bedroom conflict. And I went, what? He goes, huh? I said, I'm sorry, what'd you say? And he's all nervous looking at it again going, I don't know, it says the new bedroom conflict. Now leave me alone. Go bye-bye. And so, of course, I instantly look at her, and that's what she's doing. She's just standing up there just smiling away with her old belly, you know.
And so I said something like, well, you may notice that all the blood is draining out of Greg's face. He's pale and clammy, but
clammy.
I feel like if we are going to teach you this concept, that we need to be able to apply it to any decision that we're making.
Fine. That's that's true. That's a good point. But just to, again, reinforce her amazing sense of humor in what I constantly encounter, take one guess what was written on every sheet of paper. Oh, yeah. She tried to hide that until I was cleaning up, going, new bedroom, new bedroom, new bedroom. So
I was nesting.
You were sinning is what you were doing, nesting. So we were bound to talk about this, right? So I, of course, made her go first. But here's the steps, basically, that we used that day. We've refined them over the years, and this is really the essence of how we work towards a win-win solution. So number one, and this is a much newer, I mean, we've been using this for like 15 years probably. So I mean, we've done this a long time, but this is a little bit newer for us, this first step. The first step that we would encourage you to think about is this thing that you guys are trying to decide, is this an opportunity to sacrifice for your spouse? Love the concept of sacrifice. You think of how many verses in the Bible pair the idea of sacrifice with the idea of love. For God so loved the world that he
gave,
that he sacrificed. No greater love in this world than one to lay down his life for his friend. You know, this is how we know what love is, that Jesus Christ laid down his life for us. We ought to do the same for one another. verse after verse after verse that shows if we really want to walk love out in a practical way, that's going to always show up as sacrifice. So first and foremost, as you sit down to really kind of think through a decision, just think about, is this an opportunity for me to sacrifice? Sacrifice simply means this. Sacrifice is when I take something that I value and that I possess. So I have to own it, but also I have to value it. It can't be something I'm willing to give to Goodwill. Okay? Giving up a precious moment figurine for me would not really be sacrifice, right? Based on how you know I feel about the creepy little demon things. And so that's not what I'm talking about. You have to possess it and value it, and then you give that thing up to someone that you consider to be more valuable. It's, again, it's living out Philippians 2, that we are to prefer, we are to value one others above ourselves. That's sacrifice. So for me, that would have been the first thing I could have thought about is this bedroom thing. I want Taylor, okay, she wants Garrison. By the very right as a husband, the right that she has as a wife, we both possess 50% of the solution, equal votes into that solution. Is this something that I could freely choose to give this up? Aaron, I give you this decision. You make it. I'm great with it. But it's got to be from a place of genuineness, right? You can't go, yeah, you just make the stupid decision, you know, whatever. I mean, it's all about, right, the state of the heart. If I really see this as, you know, it's something I give to you. You make it, and I'm with you 100%. I don't care if that thing turns out good or bad, whatever, ugly, it doesn't matter. That I'm with you. We thus agreed on this, even though you're making that. Does that make sense? So ask yourself that, first and foremost. If it is, great. Then there you go. Then you can give that away. If it's something that you're going, you know what, man, as much as I value sacrifice, if we do that, if Garrison goes into that room, something about it so bothers me, that's okay too. Mm-hmm. Then go through the rest of the steps. Start within number two.
True. And what Greg is saying, if, you know, maybe you're a peacemaker and you don't like to rock the boat and you know that if you say, you know what, this isn't a win for me, it's going to cause a disagreement. You know what? It is worth speaking up for your marriage, for the unity in your marriage, because even if you're not saying it, if you're holding it in your heart and resentment is building, bitterness is building, it is worth speaking up and just saying, hey, that's a loss for me. It's okay, but it's a loss. And so let's talk about this. And then you continue forward in this process. And that is just to think win-win and reaffirm this with each other. If you're needing to make a decision, you know, and you know you're going to meet on Tuesday night right after dinner, after the kids are in bed, we're going to sit down and we're going to talk about whatever decision needs to be made. Just assure each other before you start this process, hey, you know what, I've got your back, you've got mine. We're going to find something that we both feel great about. And what that does is it creates a safe environment, emotionally safe, that we can both matter in this decision-making process. And it causes just people to relax. And it takes away that tug-of-war mindset that you often come to making decisions with. You know, I used to come with my stack of research. This is why we need to do this. And Greg would come with his PowerPoint, you know, expertise with, you know, everything and, you know, the pointer and all of that. And we would go back and forth. This is why, and you know, there's nothing wrong with researching and getting wisdom from others. But you don't need to come to the table as enemies. We're coming together in a unified marriage that we are going to find something that feels great to both of us. And so you can just relax and then continue on in the process.
Yeah, even as we do have different roles, so as the leader of my home, leading doesn't mean you make the decisions. Mm-hmm. That's not leadership. First of all, Christ modeled leadership as he gave his life. And so as the leader, I know that I've been blessed with a helpmate, that we are equal. My children are not equal to us. As the boss, it focused on the family. As the vice president, I have a team that reports to me. We are not an equal setting. We are. And that means as a leader, I recognize her gifts and her talents in the fact that we both have to find a solution that feels good to us. if I'm ramming through with a decision, that's not leadership. Don't do that. Your team will lose if that's how you show up. So reaffirm, and then number three is take time then to understand what's the real win for each person. This is the one that we would encourage you to star. This is the step that's going to take you the most time. This is where you're trying to figure out the real nuggets. What is it that Aaron wants? And the easiest way to do this, it's really, really simple. Just imagine an iceberg, all right? Understand that when whatever we usually step forward with an idea of a solution. She wants Garrison in the room. I want Taylor in the room. I'm telling you, that's always the tip of the iceberg. There's reasons why she wants Garrison in that room. There's reasons why I want Taylor in that room. That's what we're trying to discover, is what is it that you really want? Is it Garrison or is it something else? And Aaron and I have counseled couples through this for 20-some years, and we can guarantee you that 99% of the time what couples offer first and foremost as a solution has nothing to do with what they want down deep. So we've got to dig for that. We're going on a treasure hunt. However, whatever analogy works, if you like the visual of an iceberg, then get to the bottom. Figure it out. What is it that you really want? Go on a treasure hunt together. I love adventure. Let's explore. We have to be committed, though, to figuring out what each person really wants. When I'm helping Aaron figure this out, I'm not listening for clever ways to move her to my idea and my solution, because it's got to feel like a win to her and to me. So how? The easiest way that we've found to do this, simply repeat back what your spouse thought was the right solution. So I would, so this up in front of everybody, I said to her, okay, so help me to understand. You want Garrison in that room. So help me understand, why is that so important? If Garrison went into that room, what would that do for you? What would that do for our family? Just help me to better understand.
And really, honestly, I hadn't thought through at that deep level of why I wanted Garrison in that room. But as we talked, we got a little bit deeper and deeper. And I realized, you know, the room was closer to our room and it had great storage in it. And it was a little bit bigger and there was a lot of baby stuff. But really, as we talked and got deeper and deeper, that really all I wanted was whoever had the greatest need for that room, that's who I wanted in the room. So it really wasn't Garrison or Taylor. I mean, it was just whoever. I wanted whoever could utilize that room the most to be in there. And so then I asked you, you know, what about for you? What is it about Taylor going into that bedroom?
Which is why I didn't want to do this in front of everybody. Because I really had no idea. As I was really listening to her, I was sort of going, oh man, it's going to be my turn shortly, and I really don't know. And I couldn't figure it out, and it was frustrating, a little awkward. You know, she's asking me, and I'm kind of just staring weirdly, and people are like, you know, people are starting to offer ideas. And I'm like, you know, that wasn't helpful at all, actually. And can you leave? Because that was really bad. And it was hard. But I tell you, what's cool is if Aaron is equally committed as I am to figuring out what is it they really want, I mean, she did a great job with questions. Again, it felt safe. There was no pressure. We're relaxed. Creativity now is flowing. You want to shut down creativity? Man, argue and power struggle and drive to your own. What you want is the solution. That just shuts all that down. Mm-hmm. But we just kept talking, and she's asking good questions. I'm answering them to the best of my abilities, kind of thinking this through. And the more she's talking, asking me, she said something that all of a sudden sparked a thought. And I went, it just dawned on me. I was like, I got it. I said, here's what it is for me. I said, I'm not saying this is literally true. I'm just saying this has been my experience. I said, when we decided to build out this bedroom, here's how it felt. It felt like the moment we decided to build the bedroom out, that you decided who was going to go into that room. And it felt like that I didn't have a say-so. It didn't seem like you were interested in what I thought about it. So I think at some level, I resented that. I wasn't even aware. Bless you. Nothing to sneeze at, but you know, really. But I told her, I said, you know, it's just felt like it just that I didn't have an opinion. I didn't matter. And I kind of resented that. And so at a level I was not even aware of, that's why I was so insistent upon Taylor being there, is because I simply wanted an opinion. So I didn't care who went into the bedroom, but I cared because I wanted to be included in this decision. Now, I'm telling you guys, there was never one moment that I was aware of that, but that's really what I was doing. And as we talked, it made sense.
Yeah, nor was I aware of that that's what it had come across to Greg, that I had made the decision. And so it was important and valuable for me to hear that's what was going on for him. And we never would have gotten there if we didn't have that conversation.
Yeah.
What valuable information. Of course I wanted him included in the decision. I had no idea that's how you were feeling.
Yeah. So there we go. We were armed with what we both really wanted. She wanted whoever had the most needs, whatever child had the most needs in that room. I simply wanted to be a part of the decision. And that was it. And so we had it. So now you've sort of got the nuggets, and now the job is to, okay, what do you do with those? You've got them. Now where do you go? We love this next step.
Yeah, this is, I think, the most valuable step of all of this is just to pause and pray and ask God what his opinion is on this, whatever decision you're making. Because let's be real, in marriage, we have many bigger, deeper decisions than who's going to take a bedroom, who's going to be in a bedroom, occupy a bedroom. You know, maybe God had an opinion on it. You know, I don't know. He didn't really say necessarily. What he did say is that he wants us to be unified. And so this process allowed that. But think about the decisions that we have to make as married couples, financial decisions, decisions about kids, decisions about jobs, decisions about, you know, do we move? Do we give up whatever ministry, whatever job we've been at and move across the country? Do we go back to school? You know, what are all the decisions you're facing? I know for us, when Greg called, I'll never forget, we had just been home 10 months from bringing Annie home from China. And life was a little crazy. Family was in a little bit of a disarray. And we were trying to kind of calm things down and kind of recalibrate everything. And Greg calls me from the Dallas airport. And he goes, "You're not going to believe this. I just ran into Jim Daly, the president of Focus on the Family." And we started talking. And he says he wants to meet me for breakfast tomorrow morning. Because when you walked up, apparently this group of men from Focus was talking about Greg, which was probably awkward.
It was. Hopefully. Especially it was bad.
I hope it was good.
Maybe.
And he said, "You know, I'd swear to you, Aaron, I think they were going to, you know," he was talking to me like he was interviewing me for a job. And so I'm, you know, "Should I have breakfast with him?" I was like, "Well, yeah, meet the guy for breakfast in the morning." He happened to have been flying to Northwest Arkansas where we lived. So Greg went and met him for breakfast. And he came home and he said, "Yeah, he wants us to come and head up a marriage division. What do you think?" And I just will never forget just thinking, "Lord, I mean, life is so crazy right now. How would we pack up this family and move? How could we do that right now?" But what I love about our God is that we both took time to go to him individually, together. We sought wisdom. And you know what? The Lord just continued to say to me, "Aaron, lay it down. I've got this." And you know, what I felt led to was that I went to Greg and I just said, "Hey, you know what, as the leader of our family, the leader of our home, if you really feel like this is what God is calling us to, I'm all in. I am all in, and I'm 100% with you and for you." And so, you know, 10 months later, we end up packing up and moving across the country. And, you know, I'm not going to lie, it was hard. There were hard things that we had to deal with. Annie had to kind of recalibrate again. And we had a 13-year-old Murphy who was not super happy about moving. And then we had a senior in high school, Taylor. So there were some difficult days there. But you know what? We were on the same team. We were unified. We had each other's back. There was no finger pointing. And, you know, if we wouldn't have done this, this would never be like this. Instead, it was, you know what? This is hard. But we're together. We're one. And we've got each other's back.
And that's the power of that step, of really making sure that unity is restored, and prayer is going to do that. And if we don't feel God gives any big writing on the wall, oh, Accidental again. Let's just break that thing and get it over with. Why don't you smash it and then I won't feel bad. Jeez. So if God doesn't give any writing on the wall, then he's given us a brain. He's given us, you know, a way to operate within his will, to make decisions if he doesn't make that clear. So the more and more Aaron and I, you know, prayed about this. So actually we went on the drive home, we started praying. But anyway, that the fifth step, though, is fun. This is where now we take what each person wants. She wanted whichever child has the most needs in that room. I just want to be part of the decision. So how do we marry those together into one decision? So we asked the audience, what do you guys think? How could we do that? What was it? Yeah, well, and that could be one, yeah, yeah. So we got a lot of good ideas that were thrown at us. This one guy said something like this. He goes, hey, I got it. He goes, wipe all decisions off the table, blank slate. Why don't you and Greg sit down together, talk about what each child really needs and see who has the most need and put them in that room. And we kind of went, okay, so talking about, okay, that hits her. I'm part of that. That hit, yeah. That sounded great. Again, there were probably a dozen, which you said. I mean, we could have done, any number of things we could have done. We liked that one. So when we were done driving home, we had this conversation about what our kids need. It was very informative and made sense. Clearly, a child needed to be in that room. So who do you think ultimately went into that room? I'm telling you, it doesn't matter where we are in the U.S., in China, everybody comes up with Murphy. That is so fascinating to us. Because in many ways, Murphy, remember, she wanted Garrison, I wanted Taylor. Oh, yeah, you've got another child. Put that child in another. Murphy represents a what? What would you call that? Yeah, a compromise, right? Have you heard us use that term one single time? We don't. Do you know why we don't? We really don't like it, to be real honest. It's not that there's anything fundamentally wrong with compromising. So if you're going, geez, we compromise all the time. What's he saying? It's all right. Here's our concern, two things. One is that whenever someone feels like they're compromising, one of them, the danger is going to feel compromised. And the moment you feel compromised, that's a what for you. And what happens to your team? Yeah. I think the other part of that for me is that when you compromise, you're sort of settling. Nothing's wrong with that. There's plenty of decisions. Where do you want to go to eat? Well, if it ain't In-N-Out Burger, then it's a loss for me. And, you know, whatever. You know? Amen? Yeah. There's some decisions that, you know what, it's okay. They're not a big deal. Compromise. Well, I want this. I want that. Let's do this. Fine. Let's do that. It's not that big of a deal. But when decisions really, really matter, instead of settling, why not work and find something you both like, you both are thrilled with, you both feel good about? That's why we like this, because we don't just want to settle when it matters. We want to find something that we both feel great about. And you guys, we've been honest with you. We've been straightforward. We still argue. We still get into conflict. There's a lot that we don't always do well in our marriage. We're still learning, growing as individuals. But I'm telling you, in the last 15 years that we've been using this, there has not been one single time, not once, have we not been able to find something that we both feel great about. And I promise, these haven't been, as Aaron said, just decisions about, well, which bedroom? You know, well, that'd be nice if that was your only decision to make. We've had some really, really hard decisions to make. And we've used this, and it's really made a difference. So Murphy was not the one that went into the room. We've heard many funny answers over the years, because you guys are very clever and creative. I'm a popular answer to that question.
It was not
Greg. Greg went into that bedroom. No, Greg stayed in his master bedroom because it was rearranged just the way I like it.
Thank goodness.
Another popular answer that we hear a lot was Rodney. So thank the Lord that Rodney was not in that room.
In.
That would have been really eerie, and we never would have slept with one eye open waiting to be murdered. But anyway... who actually went into that room was Garrison, which was whose idea in the first place? Yeah. So every guy instantly goes, oh, dude, I told you, man, if you just would have gone along with what she was saying, you could have been watching football the whole time. You know, right? Right? Yeah, don't raise your hands if you were thinking that, but I know you were thinking that. Yeah, that's an option. And I tell you, and I've done that before. I've placated to my wife. I've gone along with what she wanted simply to avoid rocking the boat, simply to avoid an argument that certainly would inevitably follow. There's been plenty of times that I've remained silent when it really felt like a loss to me. And every time I did that, what happened to our team? Yeah, we lost. There has been times that our team has lost. Erin has lost, and she didn't even know it. Mm-hmm. We're just saying, you know, be courageous enough. If it doesn't feel like a win for you, speak up. Because at the end of the day, right, we're both committed to each other. I mean, unless something is really majorly wrong going on, the moment that I say, hey, you know what, that actually doesn't feel good to me. Could we find something that we both feel good about? I mean, what do you think she's going to say? No, I could care less about you. I want my way, and that's just the way it's going to be. We've got bigger problems. We need help. Mm-hmm. And if you find yourself in that place, actually focus on the family. We have a crisis marriage program called Hope Restored for couples who are at that spot to where they can't even mm-hmm. start at a spot where we want both of us to win. But for the most part, it works out. Put some time and effort into mm-hmm. it. We can do this. It makes all the difference in the world. As Erin alluded to in the beginning, that our unity matters. Part of this process that we hope that we've helped you understand how we move from conflict, right, is that we change it up and don't try to work things out relationally first, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. Okay, so we don't try to work this out first. We first do what? We get the log out of our own eye. What's mm-hmm. step number one? We deal with us, right? We mm-hmm. get our heart, what? Yeah, we get our heart open. Yeah. And see, when our hearts are open, that sets us up to have a very different conversation.
Mm-hmm. And as we then move into having that conversation, we move into love talk or love talk, whichever you prefer, to listen and understand and validate and empathize with each other so we can then make some great decisions together as a team, make win-win decisions together as teammates.
Yeah, we love this verse. It's out of Genesis, okay? And this is where the Tower of Babel is being built. Remember that story? You know, that what man was doing, building this gigantic tower to show man's glory, man's ability. And I love that God speaks these words. You can sort of imagine him, if this is how this all works, I'm sure it didn't, but I sort of look at it this way, that God's up in heaven looking down, watching them build this big tower, kind of shaking his head going, for real? Because he says, as if one people speaking the same language, they have begun to do this, then nothing that they do is impossible for them. That's a powerful statement by God, saying that when we come together, when we are unified, when we're speaking the same language, when we're pursuing a oneness within our decision-making, then nothing for us is impossible. You have an enemy who wants to, as Erin said, kill, steal, and destroy. He is out for your unity. Our oneness, our unity, is the superpower of marriage. This is the gift that God's given to us. What we can do together is far greater than anything that we could have done on our own. And that's a power worth protecting. And it's also easy to forget about that, to forget about its power every once in a while. But we need to be reminded. We need to be fighting for this unity. And hopefully this process that we've laid out on how you get from conflict, which can be used as a doorway to intimacy, that can restore unity, can bring you closer together, is real. It happens. We use that. Mm-hmm. We can do that. We encourage you to keep fighting your way to a better marriage. Continue to fight for your marriage, for mm-hmm. this covenant that you've created and entered into before God.
And also fight for each other's marriages. Stand with people. If someone's in crisis, stand with them. You know, encourage them to go to Hope Restored or to counseling or whatever it is that can help, you know, in a small group setting that just builds an environment that we can stand with each other for each other's marriages. So as you go down the hill today and you go back to the busyness of life and the chaos of life and kids and, you know, distractions, keep fighting for your marriage. Fight for your neighbor's marriage. Fight for your community's marriage, because it makes a difference. It is worth fighting for.
Why don't you stand with us? Why don't you guys hold hands, unless you don't know one another?
That would be awkward.
At least introduce yourself, I guess, prior to that. Aaron and I have I don't know if it's a quirk or if it's a weird deal, but anytime there's prayer, we always hold hands. I think it's a way for us just to remember that power of our unity. Mm-hmm. God, we come before you humbled. Lord, thank you for your just never-ending love. We never have to worry. You've made that very, very clear that you will never leave us nor forsake us, God. Help us to instill that level of security and safety within our marriage, that we're able to look at each other and say, you know what, divorce isn't even a word that exists in our vocabulary, that our only option is to press on forward. So God, help us to press forward well. Or as we encounter hard times, crises, as we go through arguments, as we experience conflict, help us to do that in a way that truly glorifies you, that enriches our own marriage, that we draw closer together because of our disagreements, because of our differences, that our children can observe a marriage as you intended it, not that's perfect by any stretch of the imagination, but it contains two people who are passionate about you, passionate about each other, and willing to keep working on themselves and how to have a better relationship, God. So, Lord, help us to learn to keep our hearts open, how to have compassion with each other as we listen well, and ultimately as we make decisions that they're done in such a way that they just not just shows our unity, but that strengthens our unity. God, we love you. Thank you for the chance to be together, to learn together, to sing together, to laugh together. You just lift up the couples, Lord, as Aaron said, as they go down to their lives, God, just to help them to remember just one thing that they're walking away with, Lord, that they will do different, not because of what their spouse does or doesn't do, but one thing that they will choose to do different because it's who you call us to be. It's in your precious name we pray. Amen.